Hello, and welcome to the Finniss Lithium Project Restart Study presentation. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After the speaker's presentation, there will be a question-and-answer session. To ask a question during the session, you'll need to press star one one on your telephone keypad. You will then hear an automated message advising your hand is raised. To withdraw your question, please press star one one again. Please be advised that today's conference is being recorded. I will now hand the conference over to Core Lithium's CEO, Mr. Paul Brown. Please go ahead.
Thanks for that. Look, good afternoon and welcome, everyone. Today I'm presenting a major strategic reset for our business and for our project out there in the Northern Territory. The restart study repositions Finniss with a 20-year mine life, 1.2 billion dollars in free cash flow, cost base in the global lowest quartile, built on reserve-backed tons, not assumptions. Before we start, I'd just like to draw you to the usual cautionary notes. Thanks. So a corporate overview: we remain well capitalized with 30 million dollars of cash and, importantly, no debt. My experienced team, who have joined me here today on the call and be happy to answer any questions at the end of the presentation. But together we bring a deep understanding of lithium operations, capital markets, and capability, which is crucial for the execution as we move this project forward. Our purpose, which is something we spent a lot of time on initially, was really, it's been a big focus, is to build a resilient, long-life lithium business. The study supports the strategy by resetting our cost base, simplifying operations, and maximizing financial and operational flexibility. So we're really pleased with the outcome of our study. So Finniss has a very unique logistic advantage, and as you'll hear me talk and we move through the slides, you'll see that our project really is quite unique and offers a lot of advantages, which is why we've been able to leverage opportunities throughout our supply chain. So we're only 88 km away from Darwin. It's a sealed road offering one of the lowest-cost export chains in Australia. Unlike WA projects, we avoid multi-hundred-kilometer haulage and rail requirements. So our project, it's restart ready. We have all major approvals, an existing plant, and the largest landholding in the Bynoe. Sorry, Francesco, I'll skip forward. The slide went fast. Sorry about that. The project sits restart ready. We have all major approvals, an existing plant, the largest landholding in the Bynoe pegmatite field. Upside remains through Blackbeard and Carlton and is not yet included in the study. Resources stand at 48.5 million tons at a grade of 1.26 lithium, with significant measured and indicated confidence. The study includes just three deposits, leaving growth potential from BP33 Deeps and also Blackbeard. So we've been able to update our ore reserve. Pleasingly, we're up close to 16% to 10.73 million tons. The first 10 years of mining are 94% backed by reserves. This certainly sets us apart in the market where many feasibility cases rely heavily on inferred tons. So a bit of an overview of our study. This is a very capital-efficient restart, not a greenfields build. The capital needed, we estimate, between 175 million and 200 million, which is pre-production CapEx, and we sit well below our peers who require multiples of this to certainly expand and start up, and we've seen that right throughout the industry. Some key drivers of the study. Really, we are and will be an underground miner. Switching to an underground mine delivers lower cost and high-grade consistency. We've also lifted plant throughput by 20%, improved recoveries, and reduced both mining and processing costs, unit costs significantly. Some of the key highlights and the outcomes of our study. We forecast around about $1.2 billion in free cash flow over that 20-year mine life. Our nameplate will increase to 1.2 million tons per annum. We'll produce around about 205,000 tons of SC6 equivalent. Our operating costs, we estimate between $690 and $785 a ton FOB, and that's on SC6 equivalent. That puts us in the lowest quartile globally, or one of the lowest quartiles globally, and we're able to do this off the back of a very simple mining operation supported by what is very high-quality ore bodies. Sustainability is something we have spent quite a bit of time on. Pleasingly, for the Northern Territory and the area we'll be operating in, we'll see around about $400 million in royalties across the mine life. We'll create 400 additional jobs. We'll continue with strong environmental performance, just like when we're operating. With the existing site infrastructure, we don't require any new tailings dams and lifts at this point, so we deliver ESG strength alongside really strong economics. Our underground advantage, VP33 and Grants, ore bodies are steeply dipping and of a high grade, perfect for long-haul stoping. Our underground mining reduces the surface footprint and certainly improves our ESG outcomes. Our high-quality ore bodies also allow us to produce what is a very high-quality coarse grain spodumene concentrate, and there's certainly not too many producers that can say that anymore. The VP33 certainly underpins the restart study. It has a 12-year mine life, widths of, well, quite very wide, up to 40 meters wide, great depth, and certainly highly economic with 89% in measured or indicated. It's our strongest ore body by scale and quality, but we also remain very excited about our Blackbeard prospect. Grants, which used to be our open pit, transitions from open pit to underground, which increases mine life, followed by our trade-off analysis. This reduces our mining dilution and certainly will allow the potential to link the nearby Carlton deposit, which is about 1.2 kilometers of underground drive. The flow sheet is where we spent a particular, well, considerable amount of time. What I really wanted to be able to do is remain a DMS circuit, remain very simple, and that's certainly what we've been able to do. Off the back of knowing how to operate the plants, reminding everyone that we did operate this for a period of time, and we had quite solid recoveries at around about 65%. That was off the back of processing what was relatively low grade. We knew our flow sheet worked. We wanted to keep it simple, which has enabled our cost to remain very competitive. We have been able to increase throughput by 20% from a nameplate of 1 to 1.2 million tons. We've got a dry stack tailings option, which again helps in a number of areas. We're really pleased with how simple our flow sheet remains and also the upgrades in recoveries, which we'll talk about a little bit more. We now own the crushing circuit. Previously, that was not owned by us, so that's basically allowed us to halve the prior costs and removes contractor reliance. Certainly helps us add scalability, reduces our OpEx, and gives us tighter control over our own performance. Look, I think our logistics chain, it's really undersold. As I said before, we're 88 kilometers away from Darwin, and we operate on sealed roads. We have direct access to Darwin Port. We don't require any upgrades. We don't have any bottlenecks. As I said, our peers require, you know, costly long haul or rail logistics. So we're certainly export ready and you know how to operate our supply chain very well. So cost comparison, you know, we're benchmarked against the best. Our costs are very competitive compared to our peers, and we outperform many emerging developers. In this market, cost position is obviously crucial, and we're positioned to weather volatility, which was another key outcome of our study. The capital costs, our restart requires, you know, close to $200 million. You know, compare that to some of the high multi or high billion dollar builds. We remain very competitive in that sense. Pleasingly, we've appointed Morgan Stanley to lead our funding strategy, which is focused on value and minimizing dilution. As we take the project forward, front end engineering and design is certainly underway. Blackbeard drilling is planned, with the study complete, verification finalized. Our priority is obviously funding and funding work streams, and we're certainly advancing those. But importantly, as I've stated quite a few times before, we will execute with discipline. That's been a key objective of the team, and I think pleasingly we've been able to do that very, very well. Really like this slide. I think if you look to the left, you'll see a bit of a scale there, and you'll see our nameplate getting to 1.2 million tonnes. We've based the study on ore reserves, but Carlton and Blackbeard present future optionality. I think infrastructure and flow sheet scalability enable a potential step change, certainly when justified by margins. So we're pretty excited about the future as well. Just finalising, the restart study resets Finniss as a long life, low cost lithium operation. We've certainly reduced risk, we've preserved upside and retained flexibility. We're very excited to take the operation towards a final investment decision. Thanks for that. I'll now hand back to the operator.
Thank you. As a reminder, to ask a question, please press *11 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you have one, please have one question and one follow-up per person. If you have more questions, please re-queue. To withdraw your question, please press *11 again. Please stand by as we compile the Q&A roster. Just a moment for our next question, please. First, we have Richard Knight from Barrenjoey. Your line is now open.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for the call. Wondering if you can go into a bit more detail about the improvement in recoveries and where that's coming from. Previously, obviously, the issue was with overproduction of fines, and I suppose I'm just wondering how much of the improvement that you're envisaging is going to come from a reduction in fines production, and how much is to do with sort of managing the fines production that you will produce?
Yeah, thanks. Good question. I think, I've talked about this on numerous occasions, and certainly, the experience that I've had in the lithium sector is, if you can't control your mining hygiene, it really doesn't matter the quality of your flow sheet or how you are planning on, processing, whether that's through DMS or flotation. We did have quite a lot of mining and variability through learning the operation initially when we were when we were operating, and I think that's comparable to, you know, most other ramp-ups that you're seeing in the industry. And we did get to 65%. You are right. I think, you know, when you talk about, you know, fines, generally with DMS, a lot of the, you know, the minus 0.6 ends up going to tails. We've managed to be able to, you know, use some pretty simple and well-known off-the-shelf technologies like a reflux classifier, et cetera, to be able to capture some of those fines. But I go back to, you know, I go back to basics. You know, our ore bodies are high quality. They're high grade. They don't have impurities through them. We don't battle basalt and things like that, like the WA operators. So, you know, we've got a very coarse grain crystal. You know, control our mining hygiene. We now operate the crusher. You know, so there's going to be a lot less variability right through our supply chain. You know, when we were learning how to ramp this thing up, there was a number of, you know, there was a number of modifications, small modifications done to the plant. You know, we've been able to capture all of those and utilise the data set that was left for us, which is very high quality. And, you know, we've done a lot more test work and things like that recently that complements, well, it sits aside inside of our study. So, you know, we know how to operate this thing, Richard, and certainly, you know, we can capture a lot of the fines and various the fines essentially that went to tails. So there's a big part of that, but, you know, back to basics, mining hygiene and operating the plant the way it was intended to is other key aspects there.
Yeah, okay, thanks. And maybe just one more slightly different question, just on how you're thinking about the structure of any potential funding. I mean, you've obviously mentioned you're looking to minimise dilution. I mean, does that mean you would consider things like asset level sales or, you know, obviously prepays would be useful, but, you know, question how much of the sort of $200 million you could get in a prepay. But, yeah, just any colour you can give us on how you're thinking about the structure of any transaction.
I think we're in a really solid position, and, you know, the restart and economics underpin that clearly. You know, as you saw this week, we've finalised an offtake, so we have a pretty good opportunity there, as you pointed out, around offtake and some optionality there. But look, we remain, you know, very open to any structure. We've been talking and have a lot of interest in the project, and there's certainly, now the restart study's out, we turn our attention and focus to secure funding essentially as we drive towards a final investment decision. But we have optionality, and as I said, we have no debt and we own the project 100%.
Okay, great. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks.
Thank you. Just a moment for our next question, please. Next, we have Tim Hoff from Canaccord. Your line is now open.
Thanks, Paul and team. I was just wondering around the cost reductions for the mining and processing. Is it fair that the cost reduction in the mining is largely being driven directly out of reducing that strip ratio and transitioning everything to underground? And then on the processing side, is there anything in addition to the taking back the crushing contract that's built into that 33% lower processing cost?
Yeah, I think, you know, if you have a look at our ore bodies, I mean, the geometry of them just really, you know, leverage very low cost underground mining methods, which we've been able to, you know, employ through our mine plan. So we're really pleased with the outcome there. And certainly, as I stated before, we've got, you know, really good grade and consistent grade through our ore bodies. So, you know, we're really, really confident in you know, in our ability to mine this thing incredibly efficiently. And certainly if you look at, you know, year on year over a long period of time, you know, we don't have to worry you know, about increase in mining costs with strip ratios and things like that. So the mining method we've selected is you know, very, very complementary when you consider you know, what's in the ground. I think, you know, the other thing I would say, you know, is you know, we had a largely heavy contractor model in place, which is not uncommon, you know, and it's deployed across, many operations and commodities when mining operators are, want to get projects off the ground. But, it's fair to say that the team that's here understand how to operate very, very well, and that's the team that, we've strategically put together. And, controlling things like crushing and being in control of the DMS plant all enable us to reduce costs and drive efficiencies through headcount and things like that. So we're really pleased, that we have 100% ownership in all of the infrastructure. But we're also, thank everyone that's helped us get this far as well. So I think that probably should answer your questions there.
Thanks very much. And then just around Blackbeard, you've got the exploration target there. It's a decent amount of upside to the current resource reserves. What's the potential timeline for bringing that on, or getting that through the resource drill out and then potentially bringing it online?
I think if you think about it, it's on a fully approved mining lease, so realistically the timing is up to us. We've got a really good, solid reserves base that underpins the study, and the wet season is all but finished up there in the Northern Territory. So if we chose to, we could go and drill that out really, really quickly. We do have detailed plans and a plan of attack essentially on how we would drill Blackbeard out, but those options remain open to us again on a fully approved mining lease. Should that resource convert to reserves and improve, which really underpins that second last slide I think I talked on, just with the optionality around future expansions as well. But really, there's plenty of option there, and it's at our call. We can get it done as quickly or as slowly as we need to.
Thanks very much for the questions. I'll pass it on.
Thank you. Just a moment for our next question. Next, we have Matthew Fredman from MST Financials. Your line is now open.
Yeah, sure. Thanks. G'day, Paul, and thanks very much for taking questions. Can I ask a couple more on the costs and the cost reductions, just following on from Tim? Obviously, the processing costs, I think, have been explained pretty well in the study. You've got a lot of drivers there to bring costs down in terms of throughput and the flow, simplifying the flow sheet and recoveries, as you've already talked about, as well as owning the infrastructure. But maybe can you expand on that mining cost piece a little bit further? Obviously, stepping down in terms of underground mining costs from $120 a tonne in the prior study to $60 or $70 a tonne, that's a pretty big step down. Can you expand on, I guess, the mining method you've selected, as you spoke about, and how that's driving costs down? And then also how you benchmark those costs, what sort of assets have you benchmarked that against? Thanks.
Thanks. Yeah, I think, what's been pleasing is that, we've taken the time to reassess every aspect of our mine, and certainly the mining costs are a key part of that. I think, what we weren't able to do previously was really refine the mining costs, which were, the last time we put out mining costs were in, I think it was last year's ore reserves. And, working through that, that update for our reserves, we knew we had plenty of opportunity, but we needed time to be able to, essentially rejig a mine plan and put a bunch of optionality over how we were planning on mining BP33, which subsequently led to the opportunity to get back into grants as a transition from an open pit to underground. Mining costs at grants, for example, were the strip ratio was really, really high, like well above what anyone's currently currently doing. So we've talked about the geometry of the ore body, and I think if you see it on a page there, it really is superior to a lot of other ore bodies that I've assessed, and it's allowed us to employ a long hole stoping underground method, which is really cost effective. And when you consider $120 a ton versus our study, is that realistic? I mean, absolutely, it is, and we've certainly benched that. I mean, there's only one other lithium operation that's currently mining underground, and our ore body geometry is fundamentally different to that. But it is very similar to a lot of other gold operators here in Western Australia. So so there's some of the benchmarking and some of the assumptions that we clearly we've deployed here. But the work's been done and the engineering and mine plan, supports the method. And again, the ore body is just a superior ore body, and that's really what matters at the end of the day.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Paul. And then in response to Tim's question, you mentioned, I suppose, the sort of contractor mining model. If we look at those mining costs in the study, again, have they been sort of interpreted based on contractor rates, or would the intention be to become an owner-operator given, I guess, the 10 or maybe 20-year mine life potentially being an owner-operator would screen as more attractive? So, yeah, how have you thought about that in terms of, firstly, what's presented in terms of the costs, and then also is there further upside on that if you move to an owner-operator model?
Yeah, so we assessed, obviously both options. So you probably find there's a bit of a blend essentially, there. But the site, will be managed by Core as it always has. I think you'll find the processing infrastructure and those sorts of things, we know how to operate. We've got a team here and we've built a team up here, specifically for that. We haven't made an ultimate decision on whether we'll be owner-operator or contractor. We'll make those decisions in the future, but the reality is the cost will stand the test of both of those operating models. And, we'll make a decision as we get closer to FID, but I'm not expecting those costs and those cost structures to change. I think they're very robust and they're incredibly competitive.
Got it. Okay, thanks very much, Paul.
Thanks.
Thank you. Next question comes from the line of Hugo Nicolaisi from Goldman Sachs. Your line is now open.
Oh, hey, Paul and team. Thanks for the update. First question for me, just you've highlighted obviously the unit operating cost estimate in the study, but how should we think about that on an all-in basis? And does that sort of $20 to $22 a tonne sustaining capital include, things like your ongoing underground mine development and things like that? And are there other sort of areas of costs that we should be considering here?
No, that's right. That includes our mining development costs and things like that. So that's how you should be thinking about it.
Got it. That's clear and concise. Excellent. And then second one for me, that's how we like it. And then just in terms of timing, look, I appreciate you've got to work through the sources of capital, but I guess for the sake of argument, assuming you have access to the capital you need to restart, what lithium price do you think gets you to your investment hurdle on the study, or I guess more simply, what lithium price would you want to see before you hit the FID button?
Look, I think everyone would like to see a higher lithium price, but as I sort of started it earlier in the slide deck, what we wanted to do is rebuild our cost base to be more resilient. And I think, with what we've put out, today, we've been able to demonstrate that being at the lower end of the cost curve enables us to operate, in cycles. And, we certainly expect if we do get to a final investment decision, we've got a 20-year mine life. We want to be operating through, any cycle when we get going. So, we're exploring a number of options now. What I will say is, even the lithium price is depressed. We have, no end of inquiries around supplying spodumene. So there's a lot of support, for the project. And, when we were operating, we did produce a very coarse grain. Spodumene product, which is really, a sought after product. We have offtake and things like that available. So we have a few, a few things to consider and a lot of levers that we can enact on. But I'm not going to sort of say, here's where I think we need to be. I think, the study speaks for itself and provides good optionality, through the cycle, as I said.
Okay, good. I mean, maybe if I can just press a little bit more on that. I mean, if you had the capital today, spodumene prices, depending on which industry you're looking at, now have a six handle on them, would you hit the FID button today, or would you like to see prices a little bit higher?
I think we're in a good position. We're well funded, and you know, we don't need to be, you know, if we choose to be sitting out longer, we can absolutely do that. But you know, there's a few things to consider. Obviously, the structure of obtaining that $200 million and, you know, our customer feedback, things like that. So all I'll say is we've got optionality, and I think, you know, back off the back of the high quality study and capital and operating numbers, I think there's great support out there. We'll work through those options, you know, in the coming months, and we'll keep an eye on what the market ultimately is doing and what our customers are after from us over a particular period. But again, you know, we want to be operating over a 20-year plus period. You know, we don't need to sprint back into production. We've got a great asset, and you know, we've taken a little bit of time to get ourselves organized. And I think, you know, off the back of the study, there's a pretty exciting future for us, regardless of what cycle we end up re-entering the market in.
Great, thanks. That's clear. I'll pass it on.
Thank you. As a reminder, to ask a question, please press star 11 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Next, we have Anthony Burridge from Platts. Your line is now open.
Yes, hello. Good to see the report out today. I'm just wondering about that Yahua agreement termination there. Was there a reason behind that? Anything around on the customer side around the suspension or lithium pricing or anything like that?
No, nothing like that. Thanks for the question. No, not at all. It was an option that suited both parties. And as I said, it you know, it creates good optionality for Core moving forward. But yeah, certainly you know, mutual.
So I just want one other thing. It was decided previously, I think, Pilbara Minerals said on their call around there was some general kind of tariff-related uncertainty, realising obviously the US doesn't import a lot of lithium compared to China and elsewhere, but have you seen that? That was kind of cited as potentially impacting, you know, restarts and that kind of thing. Has that been in your just general uncertainty around tariffs just because of trade uncertainty and whatever? Did that kind of play into your decision at all, or are you still thinking about that side of things?
Oh, look, I think we keep a pretty close eye on, you know, on the market. So, yeah, I haven't seen what others have said or put out about it, so I won't speculate. But, look, it's always, the market's always a factor. There's certain things that we do consider and put more emphasis on. You know, I think there's a fair bit of inconsistency coming out of, I guess, those channels at the moment with tariffs and things like that. But, you know, all we do is, you know, all I say is we keep an eye on the market. But at this point in time, we don't see that volatility affecting us right now.
Right, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Andrew Harrington from Petra Capital. Your line is now open.
Thank you. Good afternoon, gents. Thanks for your time. My question's around the product and, you know, clients. You're going to need customers on board to go FID, and who are they likely to be? And I'll have a few more after that.
Yes, if I understand the question, do we need customers on board to go to FID and who they're likely to be? Look, I think, you know, we've always had a good solid relationship with a number of customers, and that certainly hasn't changed. You know, we're not at FID, you know, currently, but certainly having a bit of optionality and some unencumbered offtake strengthens our ability to be more attractive and looked at securing capital. So I think there's a, you know, sort of an advantage for us. As far as who they'll be, I mean, there's obviously a number of options out there. There's obviously China, where the capital is. There's other parts of Asia, obviously, the remain attractive, and there's certainly parts of the Middle East that are indicating some strong interest as well. So all I'll say, Andrew, is there's plenty of optionality out there for us, and you know, over the next several weeks, we'll be pursuing all of them to get the best possible outcome for our organisation.
Yeah, I guess if you're looking for debt, offtake will probably be one of the CPs.
Yeah, I think you know, debt, whilst will be considered, it's certainly not, it's not leveraged up there as an absolute priority. So it's not a pressing issue for us currently.
Okay. Thank you. And then sort of my follow-up questions on for transport and the port, is the Port of Darwin is just there as an option for you to use on and off, or do you need to resign some offtake, or is there some reset that needs to happen? And related to that, what are current transport costs to China?
I think I only heard the first part of that. So, look, the Darwin port remains absolutely open to us. You know, there's considerable, you know, well, it's a large operating port, and, you know, obviously the new government's highly motivated at the moment. So, you know, getting into Darwin port, it's not like here in WA where it's heavy congestion and a multitude of users. The infrastructure's really solid. There's plenty of room for us and others to operate, and also us, you know, to expand into the future. So, you know, that infrastructure, it's high quality. It's very simple. Obviously, we've operated there before. You know, if you think about, you know, how simple our operation is there at the port, really, it's, you know, our supply, our pad remained, you know, a couple hundred metres away from the ship loader. So it's very cost effective, and, you know, certainly, you know, when compared to Western Australia, it's just another advantage that we clearly have in the Northern Territory around cost and operability.
Yeah, no, I get that. I guess the point of the question was, is it just on standby for you to use, or do you need to reset an agreement with them?
There's plenty of capacity, so that's all I'll say. There's more than enough capacity. And it's not like here in WA where, you know, if you don't use it, you lose it. We're not in that position.
Okay. And then the last part of that original question was, what are shipping costs to China currently from Darwin?
I think, you know, a lot less than anywhere else. If you consider, I mean, shipping costs do vary, and you know, but I will say a lot less than I've previously had, and incredibly competitive. Obviously, we're just on the doorstep of China and Asia, so I'll let you work that one out, but considerably less when you look at the distance.
Okay. All right. Thanks, gents.
Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Matthew Fredman from MST Financials. Your line is now open.
Yeah, sure. Thanks. Just a quick follow-up, if I may. Paul, assuming a successful FID at some point in the future, how quickly would you expect to reach first production? I'm just looking at that the column chart on slide 11. Is that the right way to interpret it, that potentially within sort of 6 months of an FID, you'd be producing?
Yeah, I think, yeah, six months in that 6 to 12 month period where the sweet spot is for us. Yep.
Yeah, I understand. And then you have BP33 coming online in sort of 12
yep.
to 18 months plus.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay,
I think that's why. Thanks.
Thank you. This concludes today's Q&A session and conference call. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.